Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is February 4th, 2020. Hope y'all had a wonderful weekend, enjoyed the Super Bowl, and it is now time to get in full swing to WrestleMania season. So I am extremely excited over the next couple of months to be able to hold your hand. Again, not physically, not in real life, but of course, just figuratively, hold hands as we go down the road to WrestleMania, skipping and just smiles and butterflies. And we all know that that's probably not going to happen because WWE loves to give us things that we can critique. But really, this week, there's not a whole lot that we can complain about. And I bring on somebody new this week with Michael Gross, who is new to the program, just filling in the co-host seat for a Raw review, which I normally do solo. But I said, hey, you know, I know he wanted to come on the show, and this was a spot that I had open, and we made it work. And he's a was a contributor on the writing end of this of the WWE Podcast. If you head to the website, he did a few articles there, and it was great to have him on to hear his perspectives on Monday Night Raw and what brought him into wrestling and how he got into wrestling and some favorite memories that he has. One of which is controversial, to say the least, but I didn't think so, but some I know will. And it was great to have him on. So I would love to have him back, and let me know what you guys think as well. If you give me an email, shout out at realwwepodcast@gmail.com or tweet me at on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. Let me know, you know, what you thought and maybe some topics that you'd like to cover. And, you know, we only had an hour to talk, which is never enough when you're talking wrestling. Anybody that is that has a podcast or has come on the show or talks wrestling with anybody knows that an hour talking wrestling is like 5 minutes of any other conversation. It just blows by because you get on so many tangents and you just get lost in this world that is pro wrestling, this form of entertainment that is pro wrestling. So it just flew by, but I hope you guys enjoy it. We covered as much as we could of Monday Night Raw. Look, I know we didn't get to everything and we didn't dive as deep as we could into some things, but we did the best that we could with the time that we had, and it was a blast. It was great. So we'll get to that conversation in just a moment. But so you guys know, tomorrow will be part three, the finale of Wrestling and Nostalgia with Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rock at WrestleMania 19, Seattle, Washington, 2003. Stone Cold Steve Austin's final match, and we're going to talk about that, and you know, obviously get into the audio, and we'll hear live reactions and what I was thinking at the time. So that's tomorrow, and then of course Thursday, Friday, AEW, NXT, and then Saturday. Probably Sunday though this week. I have plans Saturday. So Sunday will be your wrestling week in review with a co-host that is yet to be named. I have to kind of reshuffle the deck as after the Royal Rumble post show, we had to rejigger the deck because I kind of got lost into whose week is what, and we had some people fill in and people couldn't make it, so there was other fill-ins and rotating. So I may have to just reset the package here and reset the rotation. So there will be a co-host with me on Sunday as we look at the wrestling week in review. And don't forget, guys, this show is 7 times a week, right? 7 times a week. We have Aiden Willis covering us on Sunday, Mondays. We have, obviously, Raw Review on Tuesday. And then Wednesday's Wrestling Nostalgia. Thursday is AEW. Friday's NXT. And sometimes vice versa. And then, of course, on the weekend, we have the weekend review. And then if there's a pay-per-view, look out. There's like 7-8 shows a week. So while it may not drop exactly every day, there are 7 shows a week. So I hope you take the time to download it. I know that many of you have been commenting on the show, and I want to thank you guys for doing that because it does help out the show's rankings. We recently hit number 11 on the rankings for wrestling podcasts on Apple. Not sports category. The sports category is really tough. I think we're down in like 170 something in terms of sports podcasts overall on Apple. It's really difficult to break into the sports genre because it covers baseball, football, which we all know just dominates most podcasts rankings, particularly fantasy football. So it's very difficult to ascend in the sports category as a general, in general, because of just how much competition there is. But the fact that we're in the top 200 consistently is a pretty good deal, considering that there are thousands of podcasts out there. So, but in terms of the actual wrestling category, we just cracked number 11, and that does fluctuate. It fluctuates daily, and we're consistently within the top 20. But man, I'd love to get into the top 10, and you guys have been great in helping us do that. So I want to thank you for that. And of course, if you want an ad-free experience, you don't like ads, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Get a video, access to video. You get access to every podcast ad-free, and you get a shout out on the show and much more. You can even come on the show, and we can do our own podcast on a topic of your choice. So a lot of perks there, a lot of great stuff. So again, guys, thank you for joining me, and we're going to get to the conversation now with Michael Gross and myself as we introduce Michael to our audience as the inaugural co-host for the Monday Night Raw show review show. So we're going to take a very quick break, and on the other side of the break, we are going to get to Michael and our conversation. And guys, thank you for liking the show. Subscribe if you can, give us a rating and review, and we'll be right back with the conversation. And then, as always, we'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to the WWE podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
Matthew Pomeroy and Natasha Lamb are award-winning magicians, conjurers, and illusionists. They spend the year traveling around the world performing their shows. From mind reading to illusions, close-up magic to escapology, they do it all. Oh, and they're also engaged. So now it is time to pull back the curtain and reveal exactly what happens when the spotlights are turned off. In this brand new podcast, you'll hear unbelievable stories from life on the road. You'll learn exactly what happens when dangerous tricks go very wrong live on stage, and you will also get an inside look into inner workings of two touring performers. Matthew and Natasha will share funny, scary, and often outrageous stories from their experiences all around the world. There will also be celebrity stories you won't hear anywhere else, competitions, and unique set segments in every show. And speaking of competitions, here's one. All you need to do is subscribe to this new, brand new podcast and tweet the answer to this question at Matthew Magician. That's at Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Magician, M-A-G-I-C-I-A-N, with the hashtag Not a Normal Life. So the question is, who main evented WrestleMania 1? One correct answer will get chosen on the last day of March, and their winner will get a private message containing a link to £100 in online shopping vouchers. So what are you waiting for? Go subscribe to Not a Normal Life podcast now. And again, tweet your answer to at Matthew Magician with the hashtag Not a Normal Life. And the question is easy. Who main evented WrestleMania 1? Again, head on over, subscribe to Not a Normal Life podcast now, and you can also check out their website at matthewpomeroy.co.uk. That's Matthew Pomeroy, P-O-M-E-R-O-Y.co.uk. And on Instagram at The Conjurer Live.
Welcome back to the WWE podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, welcome to the WWE podcast. A new voice on the show in the co-host chair today, Michael Gross, who is from Ohio, right around Cleveland, he says, and we are excited to have him on. It's always good to have a new voice on the show to shake things up and get some new perspectives, and also he's a former writer for the WWE podcast as well. So Michael, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, it's my pleasure. And before we get started, just in case that I forget, because sometimes I forget and I feel awful about it, let everyone know if they would like to follow you on any social media that you'd like to share, how they can do that.
You can just follow me on Twitter at 144 Captain. Pretty easy to find. I don't really have a ton of followers, but I follow a lot of people and I have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's funny. When I didn't have a lot of followers, it's almost we're in a society now that you feel like, oh my God, like my worth is based on the number of followers, but it's not. But sometimes you feel like that, and I just it's called a sign of the times. And so, no worries, we all start at zero, right? Like we all start with no followers. So that's totally cool. Now we were talking a little bit off air about how you kind of got into wrestling and things like that and when you started watching. So I guess kind of let our listeners know and give them a chance to hear how you got into wrestling and really what drew you in and maybe some of your favorite memories.
Well, it all started with a book fair at school. I think I was in fourth grade. It was right after WrestleMania 1. And they were selling a lot of wrestling books. There was a kid who I befriended. He was really into it. So he kind of got everybody in our class into it, except with most of the kids, they grew out of it. With me, it became more of a sickness, and I stuck with it. And I kind of mentioned to you when we were off air for a little while that I was blessed enough and young enough a long time ago to see many different promotions, not just WWE. So I got to see people like Ric Flair and, oh shoot, Butch Reed, and just some of the classics, some of the greatest matches, Magnum TA before his accident, just mind-blowing stuff, and I've just loved it. It's always been something I've cared about. I told you that my younger brother was into it also, and he actually ended up becoming a worker in the Ohio Independence for a while.
Oh, wow. So, I did not know that. See, this is what's awesome. Yeah, everyone comes from different backgrounds, different ways to get into wrestling. And I'm sure that just like many wrestling fans that grew up watching wrestling, when you don't have fans that are wrestling fans, often they don't get it. And they'll say to you, oh, you like that fake stuff. And again, yeah, as a wrestling fan, it comes with the territory. But to me, that argument has never made sense, right? Because you have people who talk about, oh, what show are you watching on Netflix? Or, oh, my God, have you seen Breaking Bad? Have you seen Dexter? Have you seen whatever, Making a Murderer, whatever's out there. 90% of it is all scripted, right? So every movie you've seen, 90% of TV shows are all scripted. It's all an act, and it's all people playing a part. So I've never understood the it's almost like an insult that they're trying to deliver to people that are wrestling fans. So that usually shuts it down pretty quick. And I know growing up in high school, I got a lot of that. But the thing is, when you find people that are wrestling fans, it instantly connects you with those people. Like you instantly have something that you can talk about, that you can vent about, that you can go to events with. It's a strong bond that when you find those people, you can instantly connect. There's no other thing like it.
No, absolutely. And it's like you said, we have that instant bond. Another thing I love about wrestling is the hidden gems that I might know about that you don't, and somebody else, like your other co-host Ashley, she might know something that I've never seen. And it's mind-blowing when you can share that, because not only do you bond over that, but you get to see something new and learn something new all the time, because there's so much history in it. And I just think it's beautiful when I can pull up a match of, Dusty Rhodes taking on Tully Blanchard for $50,000, and out walks Magnum TA with a sling on his shoulder from his accident. It inspires Dusty Rhodes to win. You get goosebumps, and then I share that with someone who's never seen something like that, and it's really cool.
It really is. Wrestling's timeless, and with the WWE Network now, and this is not a plug for the network, I don't get any kind of compensation for it, but the network really allows you, in a way that we've never been able to before, go back in time, relive things. We don't have to dig through YouTube and find clips that aren't real or clips that are badly edited or whatever. The network allows you to go back, and it has a lot of content that maybe you've never seen, like the clip you're talking about with Magnum TA. And I would encourage people, whether even if you don't have the network, I'm sure it is on YouTube or somewhere else, but that's what's awesome about today in the digital age. So I just have to ask too, what are some of your favorite, I guess more current, within the last 20 years, do you have any any memories that'll really stick with you, any WrestleMania moments, even, it doesn't have to be WWE, but just in when you look back and go, man, this is what I love about wrestling. What comes to mind?
You know, I'll probably get crucified for this one, but, seeing Chris Benoit win the world title, over Triple H and Shawn Michaels. It was, I had wanted that for him. I had followed his career for many years, ever since he was the Pegasus Kid, in Japan. And I remember his first run in WCW, which was very bad. But when he'd come back to WCW after his ECW stint, I saw that this guy was a great technical wrestler, and I was sucked into it, and I was drawn into it. So that's a good moment. It's kind of weird, but I'm friends with Exotic Adrian Street on Facebook, so I talk to him a lot. I don't know how it happened. It just kind of did. And on my birthday, he wished me a happy birthday. That was pretty intense. That was pretty awesome, you know? So, I remember the first time I turned on ECW and found it. It was broadcast in Ohio on Sports Channel America at 2 a.m. just by a fluke. Well, now I get to see something really good, because WWE was very cartoonish at the time, and WCW was just getting the NWO and things. So the ball really hadn't been rolling into the Attitude Era yet. So I found something that was gritty that reminded me of the old NWA.
Exactly. And that's, I think, what ultimately forced WWE to change, as we know, from the cartoonish, outlandish, just kind of terrible comedic-like characters that were well beyond their time, to force them to adjust into the Attitude Era, obviously, which is what we know as the golden era now of WWE. But you know, when you say that, you know, you'd be crucified for saying that, I mean, yes, from the perspective that we all know of what Chris Benoit did and the tragedy that occurred, yeah, I mean, from a personal perspective, I think that that needs to be isolated from his professional career. I don't think he'll ever be inducted into the Hall of Fame because of what he did, which is unfortunate. But if you look at his professional career only, you're right. I was there. That was in Madison Square Garden, 2004, at WrestleMania 20. When he overcame, won the championship, Eddie Guerrero had the Undisputed Championship, and they celebrated together, hugged in the ring as confetti fell down upon them at the end of the show. I was there for that, so I can totally relate to that moment.
And I would say the only other one, well, there's two things. There was the day Chris Jericho walked through the front door in WWE for the first time, when he came out and cut that promo with The Rock. That was awesome. And I got to say the CM Punk pipe bomb, just because finally somebody didn't cut something that was completely scripted. And I had kind of gotten out of wrestling for about 2 or 3 years when it was nothing but Cena and Orton all the time. And it's nothing against them. They're great performers in their own rights. And I wish I had a body like Cena, and I wish I could heal like him. That guy can break an arm and he's back in the ring in a month, you know, but it got kind of played out when it was the same two people and everybody else was just outright getting buried. And all of a sudden you see this guy, CM Punk, and it's just like, wow, like he cut a promo I wanted to hear. And he's mentioning, you know, Ring of Honor, New Japan, you can't do that in Vince's world anymore. And I loved it, even though he got permission for a lot of it. He definitely wasn't the CM Punk that I first saw in, you know, TNA, like, 7 or 8 years prior. So it was great to see something fresh.
It was at a time that desperately needed it, from, like you said, it was Cena, Orton. It just felt very kind of controlled, and it was 3 years into the PG era, almost four, and it was just a different time. You didn't have mega stars there anymore. It was after the Attitude Era. Brock wasn't back yet. It was a great time for that to happen. Everything aligned for Punk to instantly become a mega star from that 15-minute promo in Vegas. And I hear so many people tell me that they stayed away. They were away from wrestling until they saw that promo, went viral, and all of a sudden people are going, whoa, what just happened? Right? That did. Was it scripted to a degree? Yeah. I mean, you said it. Of course it was scripted to a degree, but Vince cut his microphone off at a time that he said, okay, that's enough. Right? I mean, when he was talking about, the anti-bullying campaign, he was going to tell a story about Vince, and boom, the mic went off. But exactly. Those are the moments that rope you in. And I guess in a way to transition into today's product, to me, one of those moments, and they don't happen often. Even though we love wrestling, there those moments that really draw you in, and you forget about your life, and you forget about the time. Like, time doesn't exist. You get roped up, you get goosebumps. That for me was the Royal Rumble with Edge's return. Did you feel the same way? How did you feel about Edge's return to the Royal Rumble a couple of weeks ago?
I felt very positive about it. My whole thing is I wanted to see him in a ring with AJ Styles. And even though things kind of got botched and kind of ended up with Styles having a separated shoulder, that's the dream match people want to see. Now, I'll give WWE kudos for being able to plug Orton in and go with the program, which kind of kicked off our show tonight with, you know, why Randy, why? Seeing Edge come back, it was great. Even though, you know, the internet was kind of abuzz with it, I had to see it to believe it. I had to.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, there are rumors that circulate throughout the internet universe, and they don't often happen. And while I had a nice suspicion and an idea that it might, still hearing that gave me goosebumps, and it was a moment that it just reminds you again, like, this is why we love wrestling. And yes, to your transition again back to Monday Night Raw this past week, with Randy Orton coming out and essentially giving us almost nothing and kind of walking around, and the crowd was eating him alive, which is, again, if you're a heel, that's what you live for, that's what you want. So I guess there's kind of two schools of thought on this in terms of the open of Raw, where WWE said Randy Orton's going to explain his actions. He's going to explain his actions. They tweeted it out. They let everyone know. And ultimately, he didn't deliver. Now, you could say that Orton just took too long and WWE didn't deliver. And the other school of thought is, well, if you're a heel, you're supposed to piss people off. And the hook is to hear what his explanation is maybe the following week. So I guess what side of the fence did you land on there?
In my notes here, I put that I believed Randy was burning the house down with heat. He was just sucking it all in. He knew what he was doing. It was great for him not to say anything, because then the people they didn't stop chanting at him. All you heard was, you suck, you suck, you suck. And every time he'd go to say something and then just stop, they would just resurge with it. That's great heel heat. That's, you know, in today's day and age, some people need to completely cut that promo down to a T and enunciate every little word. But Orton did it without saying a word and just kind of smirking. And man, that house was hot. People were angry. I loved it. I really did.
I was annoyed by it and then realized I'm supposed to be pissed. And that, I think, is the part that initially my knee-jerk reaction, that's what I was missing from my analysis, was if you're a heel, your job is to genuinely piss people off. And when you have the entire house in Salt Lake City yelling and chanting, you suck. I mean, there wasn't really, I mean, you had a couple of scattered RKO chants. You're always going to have people who just cheer the heel because of the heel. But in this case, this was the most true, real, authentic heel heat that I've heard and felt for a star in maybe years. I mean, they didn't cheer him out of because he's a cool heel. It was real heel heat for a guy that to be honest, I've always felt he's better as a heel anyway. And I know that he has come out many times and said he loves being a heel more than a babyface. So this, to me, was really good stuff, despite the fact that people are pissed off that they didn't get what they wanted from Orton. But isn't that the idea?
Absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head right there. I mean, he was just making all those people upset. And if he's under your skin, he has done his job right. And, you know, there's so many heels today that, especially in this era where everything's super scripted, something gets lost in translation with the promos sometimes, and it just comes out as them looking befuddled or they didn't quite get the message across that you wanted. And Randy did it without even having to say a word, and that was great. That was great. I think so. I hope you did too. So, you know, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I did. Did I think it was a knockout, you know, a home run or grand slam? No, but it definitely did what it needed to do to firmly establish Orton as a heel. He kind of showed that he might have some remorse or hesitation, but the crowd just continued to feed into it more. And because no one believes for a second that the Randy Orton character is going to show any remorse for what he's done. And again, Orton is a natural born heel, and it also builds up Edge for his return to eventually avenge his attack from Orton, which I believe now will string out all the way till WrestleMania. Initially, I thought maybe they'll pay this off at in Saudi Arabia or pay it off at Elimination Chamber. But to me, that this will string out to WrestleMania. Do you think that's also going to be the path?
It has to be the path. If the things I hear about contracts are true and he's only going to wrestle five times in a year, WrestleMania has to be one. I would say he probably skips Saudi Arabia. If they end up signing that match for Saudi Arabia, it really cheapens the fact that it would be a great WrestleMania program. You've already got the story in place. The only way I could see it not happening, and you can give me your opinion on this, I would greatly like it actually, is if AJ Styles is okay and he can make it to WrestleMania to take on Edge and somehow just clean up the Orton thing, then they'd have to do Saudi Arabia or maybe Elimination Chamber. But what do you think of that perspective?
So with AJ Styles, I think that is a match that we all believe is going to inevitably happen at some point in Edge's run. And again, as you alluded to, if the rumors are true that Edge has 3 to 5 dates per year, at least matches, and a 3-year deal with 25 appearances for each year, I believe that AJ Styles has to be one, just like I believe Seth Rollins has to be one that I'm really looking forward to whenever that happens. But to answer your specific question about AJ Styles, again, this is all pending on his shoulder, which was legitimately injured. Do they dare take a detour to AJ Styles? And do they do it at the expense of Randy Orton? And I think the answer is no. The reason being that if Edge has very limited appearances between now and WrestleMania, and to me, I think the perception is from most fans and probably within WWE that the bigger match truly is Edge versus Orton. And the reason is because of their history and the long storied history that they have. And the impact in which Orton did what he did. While I think AJ and Edge will happen, number one, again, the injury, that's a question. And number two, I believe that the perception is Edge versus Orton is a bigger match. So could it happen in between Edge and Orton at Mania? It could, but as you said, I think it would cheapen and reduce the importance of the AJ Styles Edge program if they were to just kind of like slide it in as one of the fillers for Edge between now and WrestleMania. If you're going to also look at it from the perspective of what's Edge's first match back, why would it be against AJ Styles when you have Orton who just attacked him? I mean, that's the guy that Edge wants to get his hands on. So I think that program will happen. I think you have a legitimate injury you could play into the story angle once Edge and Orton are done. So I think it's going to be a post-WrestleMania program, personally.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning towards a SummerSlam program. You got to pardon my stuttering, please.
I do it all the time.
I think that's when AJ will be back. Well, I think he'll be back before then, depending on the level of the shoulder injury. But that gives him a few months for a really, really good setup for SummerSlam, and that's what I kind of want to see. Because if we're only going to get Edge and AJ Styles once in a lifetime, maybe they'll have another match or so. But with the current schedule that Edge has, I want it to be knocked out of the park, and I want a good, beefy storyline to go with it. That's, I don't know, just my perspective, though. So
yeah, this is not something you rush or I think fit in between as a filler between another program that's perceived as a larger one. This, like you said, if he has very limited dates and you're going to do it, you do it right, and you do it when you can focus on AJ versus Edge. And I think, like you said, it could be SummerSlam. And if he's only wrestling 3 to 5 matches a year, presumably it would be at the big four of WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and Rumble. You would think that would be the four. And then there's one other one slid in there as like, I don't know, Extreme Rules or Elimination Chamber or whatever one of those B pay-per-views are during the year. That would be my assumption. Now take that with a grain of salt because, you know, I don't know the intricacies of his contract. Maybe they've added dates. Maybe they've, you know, whatever. But that's how I would do it. And ultimately, the whole point that I'm getting back to is I would give AJ Styles, Edge and Orton and WWE credit for the execution of this. Edge coming back was one of the biggest pops I've heard in years. Orton doing what he did to go from a beloved babyface, even when he was kind of a heel over the last few years, people still cheered him because they loved the RKO. To go to a true heel instantly in what he did to Edge with the reaction he got on Monday night. Bravo all the way around. I mean, I do have a lot of critiques for WWE. This is not one of them. I have to give praise from Orton to Edge to WWE management to creative.
And I completely wholeheartedly agree based on a couple more things I'd like to point out. One, for Orton to pull that spot with the chairs and not injure Edge shows that he is a consummate professional. And the fact that to sell it as a good deep storyline of hatred between not actually injuring him in real life, but making the spot look so good and showing us something edgy, pardon the pun, for a change, as opposed to just some of the goofy spots we might get with Asuka spitting green mist. I love the fact that they showed us something edgy and Orton took care of him. And that's, to me, that just means a lot. I didn't want to see Edge to come back one time just for him to go away again. You know, that's if he held the chair just at the wrong angle or something like that, he really could have hurt him. So I think that's awesome that they pulled that off without an injury. That's pretty great.
It is. There is such a little margin, a small margin for error in the concerto that, especially in today's day and age of concussion evidence and concussion awareness and the chair shots to the head being banned from WWE, rightfully so. For Edge or for Orton to hit that is, again, it shows what a professional he is, and the precision in which he can deliver when needed. And again, regardless of whether it was Edge or anybody else, I mean, if you miss there, that's concussion city. I mean, not kayfabe, mm-hmm. like real concussion. So, and I also like Edge's selling when he got initially RKO'd last week. You saw his face, and when you saw his face, it wasn't one that he was in pain. It was like, oh my God, my neck could be broken. You read that in his eyes. And that's what I love. Edge has told such a story, not just with his words, but with his eyes when he first returned in the Rumble and then initially getting RKO'd. What you saw in his eyes was genuine concern of, oh my God, did I just break? He just break my neck.
I love it because it's like you said, only certain performers can definitely tell a story with their eyes. And, you know, it's like there's some where they can look at the camera and you can almost tell they're smiling in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's like subconscious. You think about it. And it's like, yeah, you saw fear. You saw fear. And I saw fear. I saw for a minute, I thought maybe he broke character. I wasn't sure. And nobody else has really talked to me about it. So I'm actually glad that you brought that up. Yeah, he looked scared for a second. He looked legitimately scared. Maybe he was. But I'm happy he's okay. And I'm really happy that he's going to work his program. And if he's only going to have a few matches a year, if we're going to cross Styles and Rollins and Orton off, I just try to think of what's a fresher person he's never faced, an opponent that he's never had a chance in the ring with, and I just think about like Adam Cole. Even though he's not going to be pulled up anytime soon, I think about Keith Lee. Keith Lee. Well, if I could sidebar real quick, and I'll try to keep it brief. Keith Lee and, in my opinion, Buddy Murphy are two of the people that have naturally gotten themselves into a good position. Everything they've done has been organic. With Keith Lee, just his performance, his strength, but it's he's got that unbreakable spirit. With Buddy Murphy, you look back to NXT when he was with Blake and Murphy, and you watch their promos, and they're kind of like excited goofball teenage guys, and he's... His ring attire is fresh. It's different from what other people wear. He has worked on his wrestling so much. His matches with Aleister Black, in my opinion, were very good and very psychological, and it built it up that he could not beat Black. So he lost it, and he joined Rollins. And he plays that second fiddle role really well. I'm not saying it's necessarily Rick to Arn, you know, in the Four Horsemen kind of well, but he doesn't look like the sniveling little toady that would do Rollins' bidding. He just looks like a guy who's got Rollins' back, and Rollins is going to help him too. So that's just my opinion. I don't know how you feel about those guys or who you might feel has that organic ability in this day and age to, you know, just light them up. It wasn't supposed to be, but they did, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Chad Gable as another guy that got himself over, even though he was starting to get himself over just being Chad Gable, and then they decided to WWE-ize him and put, you know, some silly Shorty G gimmick on him. And I mentioned this before, when WWE sees, sometimes when they see a guy and they're getting over organically with just their in-ring performances, they go, oh, we got to fix that. That's not right. Let's get him over our way. And again, they try to fix something that's not broken. But you're right with Buddy Murphy, a guy that, as you mentioned, with Aleister Black, some of the best matches I've seen. I mean, period. Not just this year, not just this month, just as a whole in my life. They were that good together, which I see why they put them together three times, maybe more, on TV over the last 2 months. Ultimately, to have him lose every single time to Aleister Black. And ironically, he lost three times in a row on TV. You know, sits there at his weakest moment and then is drawn into the Monday Night Messiah and joins Seth Rollins, who, he doesn't feel like he's a lackey. He doesn't feel like J&J security with Seth Rollins. He feels not on equal footing, but a guy that's his right-hand man. That's what's important. He's not just the guy to take the shots and do the job for Rollins. He's there as just a couple of pegs below him, but a legitimate guy that has shown the audience, shown the WWE fans, that he is a legitimate performer. And as I was going to say, ironically, with Aleister Black, even though Aleister won all those, he's still off, you know, beating enhancement talent. And you could argue that it was the best thing ever for Murphy to win those or to lose those matches because he's never been higher in the company. And for Aleister Black to win those three, you have him kind of sitting in obscurity. So it's interesting how sometimes we analyze wins and losses, and while I believe they're important and should probably be thought of in terms of ranking per se, I know AEW does this to some degree, but yeah. You know, I think that wins and losses should matter more than they do in WWE. And in this case, you look at Aleister Black, and again, he's facing guys either super low on the card or enhancement talent, local talent. It's just very interesting how that whole series has gone, and the winner actually lost, and the loser actually won in this whole at the end of this whole program.
I really feel that nobody expected anything out of Buddy Murphy. I think that they expected him just to go in there, get black masked, get laid out, and kind of look like a befuddled fool. But the fact that he could put on such great matches, it put a lot of eyes on. A lot of eyes on Murphy. I mean, he's going to be on television, so he's going to have eyes on him anyway. But I liken it to when Aleister Black took on Velveteen Dream at that first takeover. And Dream lost, but he walked out of there elevated. It was a match of matches. It was fantastic. It stole the whole show. But not only that, people said, okay, we knew Aleister Black is crazy, ridiculous good, but we got to keep our eyes on this Velveteen Dream. And it seems like the more Black wins, you're right, he's off TV. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. And again, I know that they seem to kind of be at a holding pattern with him too. And that's fine. I believe he does have big days ahead of him. And maybe we're just impatient in the way that we think it should happen immediately after his, you know, taking three wins in a row from Buddy Murphy, that he should be escalated to the next level. And that's just not reality. But I think ultimately he will be in the main events of shows, if it's not maybe this year or next year, in the near future. I would say in the next couple of years that he should be in the main event. And if it takes an organic kind of slow burn type of path, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the slow burn as long as I continue to see progress, you know, month to month. And with Aleister Black, we all know how good he is in the ring. My God, this guy is a magician in the ring. His entrance is super cool. His promos, some people like his promos. I actually am a fan of them. He just has a presence that you can't stop watching. And you're right about the match with Velveteen Dream, and really matches in general. As a general rule of thumb in wrestling, your job is, especially in big match situations, is to make everyone elevated. Even in the loss, you can be elevated. And that should be the goal, ultimately, is to elevate both guys, even though the winner should be elevated a little bit more because, well, they won, the loser should be as well. And I think that was the case. And I said back in, oh my God, it might have been midsummer this year when, or maybe even sooner than, or earlier than that, when Buddy Murphy had a match with Roman Reigns on SmackDown, and he blew the damn roof off the place, and it was the best match I had seen all year. And then it went nowhere for Buddy Murphy. Nowhere. And I was like, what is WWE doing? They should capitalize on this. And lo and behold, 6 months later, he joins Seth Rollins' group. Now, again, did they see that coming? No, they didn't. No. There's no way they could have ever seen that coming. My point is, though, that sometimes there's delayed gratification when we all believe some guy should be elevated, and it should be now. It's got to be now. I'm of the belief of slow burn, but there has to be a long-term plan for guys.
I agree, because when you force it too much, we all see how much the crowd turns on you when you force it. Especially like the Roman Reigns situation, where the people knew he was supposed to be the chosen one, and they had a mutiny. It was anarchy, you know. I like what they're doing with Murphy. I like the slow build. He may never be a world champ, but I could see him holding one of the mid-card titles and having a good run, as long as they use him the right way and let him just keep working the ring like the general he is. You know, I really see good things for him in the future. It might be a year, it might be 2 years, but I really think that he has all the potential in the world to put on some really great matches, and especially with some of the guys that are going to come out of NXT here in the next couple of years. I'd love to see it. Love to see it.
And this guy can work with anybody. That's the key with him. He can make anybody look like $1 million, and that's who guys want to work with. That's why people, even back when Shawn Michaels was labeled a total a-hole, and people really didn't like him on a personal level and his backstage antics and politics, and he was a true degenerate, as Bret Hart called him, which is how Degeneration X actually came about, which is pretty ironic that we have guys that, again, personally hated Michaels backstage before he, you know, did his, you know, his hiatus and came back in 2002. But yet they love to work with him in the ring, and guys beg to work with him in the ring because of how good that he could make them look and the quality of matches that he could have. So there's something to be said for that. And I think Buddy Murphy has that quality, as does Aleister Black. I know that we're on unlimited time here, but back to Monday Night Raw, and trust me, tangents are the name of the game on this show. It just happens. I can't tell you how many tangents I have every single show, because there's so many things that lead to other things that make you think of other things, even if it's not on the current show. So it's just the way wrestling is. Everything's interconnected. So with I wanted to ask you, but the other big ticket item that happened on Monday Night Raw, we had Charlotte Flair, who was advertised once again to come out and tell us who is going to be her choice for her WrestleMania opponent. Which championship was she going to choose? And we had Tom Phillips on commentary say, hey, is she going to choose the Raw Women's Champion of Becky Lynch or the SmackDown Women's Champion of Bayley? And we're all thinking, okay, well, we all know that it's neither, because it's been floating around forever. And she said that she would choose a champion, which, I mean, all signs pointed to Rhea Ripley. So out comes Rhea Ripley. Before I give my thoughts on it, did you enjoy this segment? Did you see this coming?
I didn't see it coming. Just because I've always felt that they felt that Vince McMahon and the higher-ups feel that the SmackDown Raw championships are obviously more prestigious. So I figured they would push one of those on us for the same match that we've seen for the last 3 years. And it's nothing against it. It's just the fact that bringing out Rhea Ripley is so refreshing that we have somebody new. We've never seen these two go at it. This could be very interesting. I'm curious if Charlotte's going to go to NXT and like spend some time down there. But it blew me away. I was really happy. It was a positive surprise for me today, or yesterday, I should say.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Matthew Pomeroy and Natasha Lamb are award-winning magicians, conjurers, and illusionists. They spend the year traveling around the world performing their shows. From mind reading to illusions, close-up magic to escapology, they do it all. Oh, and they're also engaged. So now it is time to pull back the curtain and reveal exactly what happens when the spotlights are turned off. In this brand new podcast, you'll hear unbelievable stories from life on the road. You'll learn exactly what happens when dangerous tricks go very wrong live on stage, and you will also get an inside look into inner workings of two touring performers. Matthew and Natasha will share funny, scary, and often outrageous stories from their experiences all around the world. There will also be celebrity stories you won't hear anywhere else, competitions, and unique set segments in every show. And speaking of competitions, here's one. All you need to do is subscribe to this new, brand new podcast and tweet the answer to this question at Matthew Magician. That's at Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Magician, M-A-G-I-C-I-A-N, with the hashtag not a normal life. So the question is, who main evented WrestleMania 1? One correct answer will get chosen on the last day of March, and their winner will get a private message containing a link to £100 in online shopping vouchers. So what are you waiting for? Go subscribe to Not a Normal Life podcast now, and again, tweet your answer to at Matthew Magician with the hashtag Not a Normal Life. And the question is easy. Who main evented WrestleMania 1? Again, head on over, subscribe to Not a Normal Life podcast now, and you can also check out their website at matthewpomeroy.co.uk. That's Matthew Pomeroy, P-O-M-E-R-O-Y.co.uk. And on Instagram at The Conjurer Live.
Welcome back to the WWE podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Yeah, no, I think the way that it happened, while I had a suspicion that it was going to be Rhea Ripley because of the way that she said a championship, it was surprising to see actually Rhea Ripley there rather than having Charlotte just announce it. But I feel like Rhea Ripley came out. She had a presence. I felt like she belonged. She didn't seem out of place. And while we've seen them in NXT face one another, the majority of fans have not. And so Rhea alluded to that, saying, I've beaten you, but you've never beaten me. And while people may perceive this as, oh, Charlotte's taking a step down, what is she doing? Number one, we've seen Charlotte and Becky more times than we need to at this point. I don't want to see them have a match for another year or 2 years. I mean, keep them apart, eventually bring them back. Sure, to bring them back together. But we've seen that. We've been there and done that. Bayley and Charlotte. I mean, it's a little less frequent that those two have mixed it up, but it doesn't exactly light the world on fire when it comes to WrestleMania. And so you have those two elements. It's not exciting, and the other you've already you faced more times than we can count. And it leaves the NXT Championship, Women's Championship, available, and people may say, oh, it's taking a step back. Why is she doing that? Well, number one, if you're ever going to truly legitimize NXT as a true third brand rather than just a feeding ground for the quote main roster, it's going to be inevitable that you have stars that are not on that roster that are quote main roster stars go back to NXT to fight them for their championships. I don't see this as a demotion for Charlotte. I see this as a elevation for the NXT brand, for Rhea Ripley, and for Charlotte Flair, because most main roster fans that didn't follow NXT very closely have not seen this before, so it did feel fresh, and it is fresh. And it also elevates the NXT Women's Championship. There's nothing wrong with that. You're going to have to bring in bigger stars to help make the belts feel even more important. So this is, to me, a win-win-win all the way around, and it's the best of the three options that Charlotte could have chosen.
I agree with you, and I'm going to base it on another thing. So basically, I'm known by a lot of people as the wrestling guy. They want to talk wrestling, they come to me. And it would surprise you how many people I know that love WWE and have never watched NXT, they get confused when they see Adam Cole or Keith Lee or Matt Riddle. They have no idea who these people are. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So by taking one of these mainstream top two show, you know, stars and putting them on NXT is going to put more eyeballs on it. And we're exposed. We're exposing more people to a good product. I think it's good. It's like you said, it's win-win everywhere. And maybe help them with that little bit of a ratings gap that they have going on with AEW on Wednesdays. And can I say one more thing also as far as the women go? Ruby Riott looks incredibly healthy. She looked a lot healthier than when she had been injured and had to, you know, had to go away for a while to rehabilitate. She looked – I mean, it wasn't exactly a new look, but – she just looks so much healthier. Like, she took care of herself while she was rehabilitating, and I think that's really good. I'm really curious to see what that storyline is going to do. It's not exactly the top tier of the women's league or the women's division, but at least they're starting something off and putting them both on television. What was your thoughts on that segment?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I didn't think about it, you know, until you just mentioned it about Ruby Riott, and the fans were happy to see her. I was happy to see her. It had been, what Tom Phillips said, 9 months, I believe it. It's been quite a while since we've seen Ruby Riott. I mean, I think the last time I saw her, they were using her, the Riott Squad, Sarah Logan, her, and Liv Morgan as just, you know, sacrificial lambs for Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair on their road to the main event of WrestleMania last year, getting beaten every single week and just being kind of ragdolls for them. So that's the last thing I remember from them. So having the Riott Squad, well, the perceived reunion of the Riott Squad with Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott out there, and having Ruby Riott just, you know, fake a return and or fake a reuniting, and boom, you know, you get a heel turn by Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan goes down. You're right. She did look much healthier, and that's probably what I was missing. I was thinking to myself, is it her longer? She had longer hair. What's different, right? And did she get more tattoos? Did she have, you know, I couldn't decide what it was. And you're right. It is. She just felt healthier, and, you know, that's great. You know, I'm glad to see her back. The women's division always needs a boost, especially more, I think, honestly, more on SmackDown than on Raw. But certainly it's great to see her back. It adds depth. And you have a storyline with Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott. You know, I don't know what her explanation is. We'll have to see. But clearly Liv Morgan, the babyface here, who just continues to beat Lana week after week, is, you know, which I don't know what the heck that's supposed to mean to any of us. And maybe they have finally run out of gas with Bobby Lashley and Lana and Liv. I hope that they've run out of gas. But my thinking is that Lana getting her finishing maneuver on Liv Morgan, maybe it's going to continue. But I think the focus here will be on Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott.
And I see it that way, too. I agree. I feel like you said, they ran out of gas with Lashley and Lana, and they're just trying to sweep it under the carpet. I mean, first of all, I thought that the whole lesbian storyline, I thought that was just too much. I mean, of course, I loved everything in the Attitude Era and everything, but there's a point where I'm like, come on, like, you just can't do this. And so I'm glad that that's quietly going away. At least, I don't know, but I think it's quietly going away. Of course, it all happened. it happened all at the same time with the Lars Sullivan adult film thing. So, you know, of course, they I think they want to sit on this real fast and, you know, just keep it out of the media. But I hate to say this in the nicest way, but Lana needs to stay away from a wrestling ring. She just I'm saying it in the nicest way. OK, I actually met her and Rusev once down. They came into the Blues Club I ran in Memphis. And that guy has a back the size of a sofa. I swear. And real, real nice people. Like, he's not a brute. He's like a thank you very much, sir, kind of guy, you know. But yeah, she needs to stay away from a ring. And hopefully they kill off that storyline. And let's go full bore with Ruby Riott. Let's go full bore with Liv Morgan. Let's give them a good 8-9 minute match and just let them see what they can do. They've already got chemistry. Let's do this.
Yeah, no, I'm down for that too. And I think it is petering out, at least this week. It certainly seemed that way, that whole love triangle that dominated the main event of Raw for, it felt like, weeks, is seems to have started to die down. But my concern is that with Vince seeing the spike in ratings for those type of segments, that another crazy, some kind of love triangle, maybe a little sex mixed in because Vince loves to do that. Some kind of wacky angle is going to happen again and probably happen sooner than later because of Vince's own personal liking for those things and because the numbers seem to back him up, even though I'm not a fan of that kind of stuff. I want to watch wrestling to, you know, watch freaking wrestling. I'm all for those two going one-on-one. I'd love to know her reasoning for attacking Liv Morgan. And I'm sure we'll get it maybe next week on Monday Night Raw. So moving on a little bit to let's see what I want to talk about. Oh, the Drew McIntyre match that he had with Mojo Rawley. Now, the Royal Rumble winner here, Drew McIntyre, comes out and he cut a good promo thanking the crowd for coming through the blizzard, which they, you know, talked about several times throughout the show and showing a pretty packed house in Salt Lake City. So Drew McIntyre comes out. He's very personable. He says, you know, I'll get to you in a minute, Mojo, and then says that when I put this microphone down and count to three, I'm going to claymore your head off. And that's exactly what he did. And Mojo, for his all of his talents, and I believe he's underutilized, you know, I don't think he should be main event, but I don't think he should also be, just kind of, you know, I don't know, enhancement talent, for lack of a better term, for Drew McIntyre. I do understand what they're doing. They're building Drew up as big and as tough as they can to a Brock Lesnar level so that when he gets to Brock, that we get to see, you know, the unstoppable force versus the immovable object type of mentality. So how do you feel about Drew after his victory and the follow-up to it? It's been very brief. We haven't seen a whole lot of Drew McIntyre other than these, you know, quick promos or very quick matches.
I think it's been key in them turning him face. He's within basically, I would say, about a month and a half span, he went from the psycho Scotsman to the sexy Scotsman.
He's got a psychopath.
That's it. Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of the shimmy he did when he took off his vest. I was like, what are we doing here? But I think just keeping it brief is a big part of why of how they turned him babyface. Because, you know, maybe if he's in the ring too long cutting a promo, maybe we're all going to start to think, hey, wait, wasn't he supposed to be fighting one of our beloved heroes like a couple weeks ago? It's a case of less is more. I've never known him to be a great orator. That doesn't mean he's a bad promo. It's just, if you think about it, how many of his promos really last more than a minute and a half? It's usually he beats up somebody, you know, gets a few grunts in and then beats up somebody. And now, you know, it's using that little bit of time, make it quick, deliver the message, make good on your message, and you're out because you're too good for it. And as for what you're saying with Mojo, once you're in that 24/7 title bracket, it's just curtains. You know, I hate to say it. Yeah. You know, I mean, you look at everybody who's held that belt. I mean, mostly R-Truth, Drake Maverick, Eanes Cantor, the center for the Boston Celtics, somebody from NASCAR. You know, it is so demeaning to the wrestlers to carry a belt that means nothing. And then on top of it, to not defend the 24/7 title today. I mean, I get the fact that they don't want Drew to win it because he's going to win. And now his name will be sullied by carrying that thing around. But you have to give us a good reason it's not being defended. Just have Mojo out there saying that the title got stolen. I can deal with that. So the belt's not on the line. That at least makes sense. But to say you're not defending it is just kind of silly when it's the 24/7 title. What were your thoughts on that?
That was something that I didn't think about until afterwards. Drew beat him, and I'm like, so does that make him the 24/7 champion? And we learned, no, it doesn't. And the same thing happened as I was thinking of, we didn't talk about it, but with R-Truth and Brock Lesnar, that a few weeks ago, Brock ended up F5-ing R-Truth.
And then he was thinking about covering for him for the 24/7 championship, and then thought better of it, as if, you know, this title's beneath me. And, you know, I get it. The title from a ranking perspective is beneath him, but you don't need to blatantly put that out there as, yeah, that is, this is just a toy. This means nothing. I don't like that. I would like this belt to have a little bit of value for whatever's left, whatever scrap of dignity that this belt has left. Savor it. I mean, I don't know if there's anything left. My God, I mean, like you said, everyone and their brother has held this belt, and it's nothing more than a just kind of an entertainment piece of in comedy shtick than anything else. And that was the worst thing that could have happened to Mojo, was carry that 24/7 championship that ultimately R-Truth's going to get back anyway, which, you know, I'm fine with him taking a break from carrying the belt. I really am. I get it. R-Truth is super talented and he's entertaining. He's legitimately funny at times. But I don't know. This has been kind of relegated and defined down to even a level that I am not comfortable with anymore, especially with having Mick Foley introduce this belt. I mean, this wasn't, you know, this wasn't somebody that just kind of just popped up, or a fan tossed the belt to somebody and said, you should defend this all the time. I mean, this was a legend, a legend in the wrestling industry, introduced this belt, and it has been just all but destroyed in terms of dignity and value. So I know we only have a little bit of time left. So in the essence of time, I just want to get your quick thoughts on a couple of other things that happened on Raw. And that is, well, Ricochet winning the triple threat match getting the opportunity to face Brock Lesnar at Super Showdown in Saudi Arabia in a few weeks on Thursday, February 27th. So what did you think about that match? What do you think about Ricochet and Brock Lesnar coming out unadvertised, which was, I did not see that coming, and having him F5 Ricochet at the end of the show?
Well, okay, it puts more stock in Ricochet, obviously. First of all, that Tower of Doom suplex spot was brill. I loved it. And of course, that led to the 6:30 for Ricochet getting the win. So it's to put in your mind that the added weight of Seth Rollins in it helped, you know, knock the wind out of Lashley, making it very much easier for Ricochet to win. This is what I take away from it. Ricochet's obviously been put in the Finn Balor spot of the small guy that's too good to lose, but not good enough to hold the Universal title more than a day. Which is sad, because both those men are incredibly talented. But that's what it is. It was the old Rey Mysterio spot. But with somebody like Balor and Ricochet, they're big enough to where they seem as a more credible threat. They don't seem completely like that whole, you know, mini Mysterio kind of thing. I think it's fantastic. Everybody knows that Brock does better in big matches with smaller guys. That's why Seth was like the perfect person, you know, size wise. AJ, Finn, all the guys. Ricochet has the task of leading Brock, because we all know when it comes to wrestling, the heel calls the match and leads it. But I feel that these smaller guys with their technical abilities were the ones that were actually leading Brock, and then Brock just took over when he decided to suplex him. And I think they're the ones who's actually creating the art in the ring, so to speak. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm very happy for Ricochet. I want to see what he can do with Brock, and how the only thing I ever really worry about is guys, especially with Daniel Bryan, is Brock's a gorilla, and I'm afraid he's going to hurt one of these smaller guys. Not purposefully. I just think he'll get sloppy on a suplex or something. That's what I'm afraid of, okay? I hope he doesn't, and I don't want to see that happen to Ricochet. With that being said, though, with Ricochet calling the shots in the ring, I think we could get one interesting matchup. How about you?
I'm with you. As far as Brock Lesnar injuring one of these guys, it's certainly, from a visual perspective, the difference in not just wrestling style, but appearance and just the way that their bodies are structured certainly makes you very concerned, not just as a, you know, from a kayfabe perspective, but from a true human perspective of, yeah, like he could truly injure one of these guys if he, you know, just misses by an inch. I mean, it's true. Luckily, Brock Lesnar doesn't have a long record, if any record, of injuring a guy like Ricochet.
that I can think of. I mean, he has, while he is physical and he's a monster, he's pretty damn safe. It may not look like it, but I think that's the art of what Brock does, is making things look dangerous, even when they are, I mean, from a wrestling perspective, safe. Now, with that said, can things happen? Yes. Can Brock, in all of his strength, put a little bit too much oomph on a German suplex and end up having Ricochet land on his neck? Yeah, it can happen, and I don't want to see it, and I don't think anybody does. But from a storyline perspective, having Ricochet in this is great for Ricochet to get exposure and be in there with Brock to see how long he can last with Brock. I hope it's not a Kofi Kingston situation. I hope that he actually has at least, you know, 4 or 5 minutes with Brock, using his speed, using his quickness to avoid Brock, do quick strikes to the head and bounce around, get maybe a couple of hope spots. Ultimately, I think we know the outcome. I mean, I think there's a 99.9999% chance that Ricochet is not winning this. To build from Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre to Drew McIntyre and Ricochet at WrestleMania, it just makes absolutely no sense. The purpose of this match is nothing more than to just, it's a stopgap for Brock Lesnar and stepping stones to the end game of WrestleMania with Drew, but it's also Ricochet and what we just said for his career. What it's supposed to do is give him spotlight, get him in the eyes of fans. What's the best way to do that? Put him in a main event with Brock Lesnar. That is what this is truly about to me, is showcasing what he can do against Brock, getting eyeballs on Ricochet to build the next star, because that's what it's always about, is building stars. That's truly what this is about to me. It's not really about winning or losing, because that is honestly it's a foregone conclusion at this point. There's just no way Ricochet is winning the belt.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. It's kind of hard not to. But if Ricochet, like you said, can pull a 4 or 5 minute match, get in a couple of good quick moves, just get a little footholding, it climbs him up the ladder just one more rung. Ricochet is young. He's super athletic. And the WWE hasn't even touched his potential yet, especially if you watch some of his old Will Ospreay matches and things like that. You're just like, this guy does defy gravity. And so maybe let him hit some of those incredibly insane moves, because it looks like it's such a crazy, insane move that it might actually knock out the beast. You have Brock play stunned for a couple minutes and then, back to reality. But it just makes him look that much better. And real quickly, to touch on something you said, you know, when you're talking about he doesn't have Brock not having a track record of hurting someone that size. If you look back, do you remember that one-legged wrestler, Zach? He went through that whole program with that kid and never hurt him.
Zach Allen. Now
that you mention it, he never hurt that kid.
He made you believe he did. And boy, I remember that he pulled his prosthetic leg off and he was tossing him around the ring. I remember that very well. And I was thinking, oh my God. I mean, he's done it to Rey Mysterio at times too. And like this past year, he did it to Rey Mysterio and you're thinking, oh my God, Rey's dead. Like, he's got a broken bone, something. I mean, really. And that's the visual of it. And it's disturbing to watch, but injury reports outside of being, you know, bumped, bruised up, which is normal, of course. But outside of that, you don't hear about Brock hurting people. So that's what makes me have confidence in that not actually being a possibility. Well, not a possibility, but a likelihood is it's low.
Lesser possibility. Yeah.
Exactly. So I know we've only got a couple minutes left. So two quick things I want to talk about and we'll wrap it up. Becky Lynch and Asuka again. Asuka gets on the mic after tapping out Natalya and challenges Becky again. Again, the only thing we got out of Asuka's promo was Becky Lynch, and then, just kind of screaming in Japanese. After that, and Becky comes out with her Thug Life glasses and talks to Asuka and accepts her challenge. And so, again, my thought is quickly that this event in Saudi Arabia is just kind of the leftovers from the Rumble. There wasn't going to be any real new revelations, any big, big new matches. This is just the leftovers for the Rumble so they can get to the Elimination Chamber and set up the final WrestleMania matches. So I'm fine with Asuka versus Becky again. They certainly have great chemistry. I'm looking forward to a third match between these two. But again, it feels a lot like Brock Lesnar and Ricochet, in that it's not necessarily, again, about the winning and losing, because this one also feels like a foregone conclusion. It's about the quality of the match.
Yeah, this is going to be their time to show off a little bit. I think they always do, but I think it's going to be more about just having a great match, making it the blow off. and that's going to end it. Like you said, going into Elimination Chamber, figuring out all the girls for that and, the setup, the dynamic, and who's going to get the big Mania push. But I have the most important underlying question. Is Kairi Sane still laying in the aisle just face down?
That's right.
They just left her for dead.
And she's like, she's reaching for Becky as if, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Oh, jeez. But yeah, it's going to be the blow off. And like I'm fine with them going at it one more time. I really do feel that Asuka hasn't completely been utilized to her potential, but there's still plenty of time in her career for that. And with some of the girls coming up from NXT and like Toni Storm and things like that, Rhea Ripley, we can still get a lot of great matches. I mean, obviously, you look at this versus 4 years ago, you've got a night and day difference in the quality of your women's product. So give me a good match. Entertain me.
There is so much to look forward to with the women's division. I mean, Shayna Baszler floating out there, and she's rumored to be facing Becky at WrestleMania. I know Ronda Rousey is another name, and we could speculate for hours on that. But again, one last thing I want to talk to you about, and then we will ride off into the sunset here, is Kevin Owens and his six-man tag, who just, I mean, every time he finds opponents, they just end up dropping out because of injury. Ends up 1-on-3, him versus the AOP and Buddy Murphy, and ends up getting two eliminations, and it was down to Rezar, and Rezar ends up hitting his finish, I guess that's what it was, a couple of times, ultimately to the losing to Seth and the AOP, and then having the crowd give him a standing ovation. I guess, where does this really place Kevin Owens after he continues to lose to this group, this unnamed faction? I don't know where Kevin is right now. Do you?
I can't honestly say that I do, because what I'm afraid is that it's going to lead to a mimicking of Buddy Murphy. He gets frustrated, and if you can't beat him, join him. And if he's already had this face turn, we might as well stick it out for a few more months, make it really worth his while. I know that Jim Ross has said that a lot of people who are fantastic heels will do their best work as baby faces once they turn. So I want to see I want to give Kevin Owens some more time in case that's the plan, because I really don't want to see that. As far as where he is on the card, I mean, he's still headlining the shows, but he's definitely out of any kind of title contention. It does kind of make him look silly. I think he may find someone to replace the Viking Raiders. And I'm just kind of curious as to who, because the tag team scene has always been rough. Oh, at least the last 5 or 6 years, it's been rough, And I don't know if this is an attempt to elevate the tag team scene. This is a confusing situation. We have two singles wrestlers as the tag champs tagging with a tag team who are not the tag champs, going against two singles wrestlers and a tag team. And I mean, the Viking Raiders, you got to love them. They're the modern day, a combination of the Road Warriors and Steiners. Maybe not quite the technical level of the Steiners, but especially for their size, they can do some amazing things. AOP has been mishandled since they first walked onto the scene due to injury, and it just hasn't been a good booking. And it did nothing for the Viking Raiders for them to be this big, beastly tag team with all the ability in the world, and they had to keep rolling over enhancement talent, So it's very confusing where it is for all the baby faces on this. Joe, I don't know if he's injured or not. Kevin Owens looks dumb. And the Viking Raiders are they can't get their wins back.
It just feels like people are floating out there, and they haven't really found their footholding, especially the babyface side. Again, there's rumors floating around, too, that Samoa Joe failed a wellness test. But WWE hasn't officially confirmed that. And they have always been public about their confirming that the a talent has failed the wellness policy. So I'm going to give Joe and WWE benefit of the doubt and just believe that he's out due to actual injury. It feels as if Kevin Owens' true babyface run hasn't got a real chance to breathe. Especially now with Edge's return, this whole story has been overshadowed by Edge's and Orton's program, and rightfully so, which is a bigger program, and Edge's return is a huge deal after 9 years. But it feels as if Kevin Owens he's not quite where he wants to be. He's kind of scratched it and then fell back and then continues to lose to Seth and the AOP and now Buddy Murphy. Yeah, I hope they don't turn him heel and they give us a fair kick at the can. But could it be a possibility? Yeah, but then who would oppose this group? I mean, we've seen so many heel turns over the last 6 months. I just don't know who would oppose them. I mean, CM Punk's a name that's thrown out there as the savior that's going to take down Seth and this whole group. But I mean, who knows? So, all right. Well, I know we're out of time now, but we'll definitely have to do this again. An hour. See how quick an hour flies by when you talk wrestling? It's crazy.
I know. I had a blast. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Let me try this again. You don't understand how much it means to me.
No. I'm glad. It's always a blast. You're welcome back anytime. Before you go, don't forget, if you want to let anyone know where they can find you on social media.
It's going to be at 144 Captain. And it's just me, Michael Gross. Feel free to add me. And if you have anything you want to talk about wrestling, send me a message. I'd like to do some more segments with you in the future. One, when we have more time, and two, when we can just get off on our tangents and not have to worry about anything. So.
That's fine. Maybe we'll have the show will just be like named Tangents, Wrestling Tangents. Maybe that's what we'll do. But all right, Michael, thanks for coming on. I know you got to get to work, so you enjoy your shift, and we'll have to do this again soon.
All right. Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.